medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the business solutions lead at Colas IS Support. Back with me this week, and most weeks, is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Hout Cooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Welcome back, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I mean, I think I finally dried out from that little venture over to Hawaii. I had the pleasure of enjoying a 70-year storm. So a Kona low cyclone. So everybody loves to take a vacation in what would it be considered a Pacific hurricane? Is that effectively what that is?
Basically, yeah. Tropical storm, hurricane, cat one, somewhere in there.
It's hard to time those, I tell you. But when you can get one, it's quite fantastic.
Nailed it. Way to go.
So, but how about you? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Stuck in a couple days of user acceptance testing, or actually, I think it was business acceptance testing. So it's been a very busy week, to say the least. And my brain is very tired, but that's a good thing.
Yeah, stuck in a room with 30 of your closest, not so closest friends, right?
Yeah, and the room wasn't very big. And there were no windows. Ugh.
But the business has been preparing this whole time and is well aware of everything that you guys are rolling out. So they were ready to jam, right? This was never the first time that the business has seen any of this, right?
Well, maybe a few of them were new to it, but it was great, actually. It went really well.
All right. So that's good.
Overall, I was very pleased. So I'm not going to complain too much. Yes, of course, we have some additional work that comes out of those types of sessions. That's 100% normal. But overall, not too bad.
Good. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And of course, we took a couple of weeks off to try to get, recharged before we come into our 100th episode.
Yes.
So congratulations on 100. And we brought some fun guests with us today to help celebrate. Did you want to introduce them?
I'm very excited that we have some special guests with us. Today, we have John Vaughn, who is the CEO of Quest Oracle Community, and we have Chris Leaping. So he is a return guest, as a matter of fact, with us today. So welcome, both of you.
So great to be back.
Yes, we're so glad that you could be here to celebrate 100 with us.
And you know, last time I was jinxed this time, because last time we recorded a podcast together, I had just come off of being sick, and sure as shooting, here we are again, sick again. So I'm showing up with my Wolfman Jack voice for the podcast, ready to go, smoking my pack of Marlboro Reds.
That's right. On the back of your Harley. I mean, just come on. I mean, the weather's been really nice in Colorado. You've been, just be honest. You've been on your Harley the last week. It's been great.
Exactly.
Great. It's all good. Well, that worries me that if we're going to ask you again in the future, you may say no, because you're like, every time I come in, I get sick.
Exactly.
We'll have to break this cycle.
Streak.
Yeah.
The JD connection curse.
Ouch. We don't like that.
So you don't need that.
No, not at all. So how do we want to kick this off, Chandra? What were you thinking?
Well, I think the first thing that I would really like to do is thank John for supporting and allowing this crazy idea to move forward. It has been, 100 episodes, so we're just over 2 years in, has been quite amazing from my perspective. It's been fun. I've learned a lot, actually, not just about podcasting, because clearly I had no background in that, but I've learned more about the product. I've met a lot of great people, new faces in the community through the podcast, whether it's at conferences or guests that we've had on. I've learned a lot about how important the BA role is in the JD Edwards sphere. But I've also gotten to learn more technical areas as well. You know, having no CNC background, having, you know, Clayton come on to speak to us about CNC topics. I've learned through you a ton covering form design aid and how as a BA, I can capitalize it and use that to help in my day job. So it's been an amazing 99 episodes.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Did you have imagined that this was going to be 100 episodes when you started?
Actually, no. I didn't know where it would go. I didn't know how it would go.
And to be clear, I mean, this was Chandra's idea. She hit me up, you know, one day and said, hey, I just talked to John Vaughn about some of the challenges within the community with business analysts and trying to train new business analysts and, you know, get that next generation of JDE business analysts up to speed. Would you do a podcast with me? And I went, hey, what the hell? And, you know, that sounds like fun. You know, had no idea that it would get here. And John, you know, actually stepping up to say, you know, he was receptive to it, obviously. And then, you know, the help, you know, with Quest's help, you know, supporting and putting the structure around it. You know, one of the fun memories was we had already, you know, after Chandra asked, we went through and came up with like a background or a logo, right? And because we had met at Blueprint and this was all about, you know, kind of the blueprint for JDE, we had this napkin concept because JDE started with a napkin, right? We always traded ideas with napkins. And so we drew out this napkin and everything for this logo. And that's one of the first things that we presented to John and company about, you know, hey, we got the JDE, and we want to do this JDE podcast. We're going to call it the Blueprint. And we had this napkin design that went with it. It was pretty cool. It was fun.
Yeah, we really didn't. I know that when we first started talking, we didn't set a lot of definitions of success or like what we expected to happen. I think we really were just kind of wading into the space. We knew that there was a need, you know, in the marketplace to make sure that business analysts in particular were better informed, better educated on everything around the opportunities that JD Edwards offers. And I remember us having some conversations of, well, what are our definitions of success? And I remember us kind of struggling of other than just saying, well, we want to find an audience. We want to deliver value. You know, I think where this podcast is today, I mean, I appreciate the recognition, but you guys are the ones, you know, doing the heavy lifting. And I mean, it's just amazing. Congratulations on 100 episodes. I mean, it's not easy. It is hard work what you guys do. And it's a testament to the consistency and the value that you're creating for the community, for the JD Edwards community. Because you've developed a very loyal, consistent following that, you know, when we compare it to benchmarks in the podcast industry, you guys are, you know, way above average. And so I'm really proud of what you guys have done. I do think there are members of our team at Quest that, you know, I know, Chandra, you said you want to make sure to recognize those folks too, but there are people behind the scenes doing some work, but, you know, just... Mm-hmm. Chandra and Paul, you guys are amazing. And I look back fondly on those early conversations. I really enjoyed I received your invitation, just really enjoyed kind of reflecting on sitting in the lobby at InFocus and there in Denver and some of those initial conversations we had. So it's been fun to kind of reflect over the last couple of years.
Here's what I find fascinating about the story is, you know, as somebody who focuses on content creation for the marketplace all the time as part of my day job, I have the opportunity to run in circles with people that have big production crews. They do this all the time and they put tons of spit and polish on it, almost to the point where it's almost sanitized and overpackaged. And the fact that the two of you have side hustled this thing and have done 100 episodes and have the kind of chemistry you have and then just the everyday attainable person that we all like to spend time with versus some, you know, podcast star, I think it's simply amazing. And so happy for both of you. And I'm happy that you made it 100 episodes. I mean, come on. If this wasn't going to work, you guys would have probably fully known it by episode 10. And by episode 20, John would have probably pulled the plug. Yeah. Like, you guys are going to have to do this on somebody else's brand name.
True story.
A very true story.
That is part of what makes us who we are. We're just, we want to be authentic. We want to be reachable. We want to be somebody or some people that you can relate to, right? And connect with, hence connection. For us, that's who we are outside of, well, at least I'll speak to me. That's who I am outside of work as well. I'm just,
and your audience, they do hard work. And they need a support system like no one's business, because they're not getting this support system within their companies most of the time.
Agreed.
So this is a lifeline for them. So in addition to everything else, this is kind of a service project for you guys.
Well, it's funny because we've joked many episodes that some of our interviews with some of the folks in the community, our conversations turn into therapy
sessions.
You know, that we're doing more to just provide almost empathy to the rest of the community so that they know they're not alone.
When you pitch John on this, so like, what is the pitch at this point? Like, you're trying to get him on board with providing resources, or is it just permission to talk to people in the community? Bring us into that.
Do you mind if I give a little context?
Go right ahead. I thought it would be good.
Just kind of thinking back of just like, well, you know, sometimes you get a little bit you get a little distance and you're like, well, where did this thing start, right?
How did this start anyway?
Yeah, no doubt.
But you alluded to it a little bit earlier, you know, Chandra did, of this was three or four, I guess it was the spring of 23 when we were in Dallas, I believe, for Blueprint. And at that executive forum, Paul, you may remember this because you were probably standing up front receiving questions from J.D. Edwards executives that were attending the executive forum, and they were talking about the challenge it was becoming for them to find the knowledgeable resources needed to actually run their J.D. Edwards. And then out of that was born a small focus group that was, you know, charged with really identifying the root causes and the root issues that we needed to identify in order to actually, for Quest to try to come up with an offering to hopefully help meet those needs. And Chandra was on that focus group. And that's kind of where that conversation started, was around, you know, business analysts or business systems analyst role, and how, you know, that was kind of the critical piece or the critical role within an organization if they were going to effectively leverage their J.D. Edwards investment. So I think that's kind of the initial background. And then Chandra, maybe I'll pass it to you to take it from there on your memories and your perspective of how it evolved.
I think it was actually 2022.
Was it 22?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wasn't it?
No, the podcast started in January 24. Right?
I thought it was the executive forum in 2022. Okay.
It was
2023. Okay.
It was definitely 2023 because it was in Dallas. Then this question came up, and you know, and then later, you know, following that conference is when you got on the focus group, and then we started talking about that. But I mean, again, what it was your idea to do a podcast, but why a podcast? I mean, I remember, but I'm going to cue you as the question, you know, the podcast host. I have to ask other people questions. So there you go. You know, why a podcast?
Well, for me, we're in a transition period right now where in the J.D. Edwards community, we have a lot of knowledge, and a lot of that knowledge is with people that are probably soon to be retiring. And we are trying to bring up to speed people that might be a little bit younger. And some of those younger individuals consume learning in different formats than maybe your traditional going to take a class or going to sit with somebody for 2 weeks. podcasting is really a great way to be able to share little bits of knowledge that people can consume on, you know, a run, a walk while they're vacuuming. Maybe they're cooking dinner. They can do it kind of on their own. There's no structured format necessarily to what we're delivering. We try to keep it more conversational in nature, which tends for a lot of people is a great way to learn things. It doesn't feel so pressured, if you will. It doesn't feel so structured. Not only that, we hope as a part of it, we make it fun. You know, something that's a little bit different than maybe listening to a pre-recorded training session on UDOs.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a completely different medium than anybody had necessarily tried before, right? So it's like, right. Hey, let's, you know, we've tried to put materials out there in all these various formats in the past. Why continue to repeat to do the same thing that we've done, right? Why not change it up a little bit and see if we can't educate through conversation instead and shared experience? I don't know if we're educating everybody else as much as we're educating ourselves. I mean, you know, you've mentioned learning about the importance of BAs. I mean, you've expanded my, obviously, awareness and recognition of, you know, who really makes J.D. Edwards tick when it comes to our customers, you know, and how critical your role is, you know, for all of our customers across the world. Everybody's got BAs and SAs, and they are the core of what really connects the business and the product and makes it all work. We wouldn't be, you know, J.D. Edwards effectively would not be where it's at if it was not for all of you. So this has been great getting to know many, many other BAs and gaining just a different perspective than I think we would have had if we were just trying to be educators in the traditional sense, right?
Right. So. Yes.
Yeah. And I think too, you guys, you know, we started with a focus, original focus on kind of the, you know, the business analyst role. We wanted to, you know, I remember some of those early conversations of, you know, we wanted to focus on people translating business needs into system functionality of those working between IT and the business and solving real world operational problems. So it was really about the people doing the work that are making the system actually deliver value. But as I was kind of thinking back over time, I feel like you've had a bit of a natural evolution with regards to your audience. I mean, it's not that your focus changed, but I think the audience has expanded beyond just business analysts to be interest to functional leaders, IT leaders, consultants, partners, broader ERP decision makers, because the challenges aren't isolated, right? ERP decisions are cross-functional and strategic. So, you know, that's how I see maybe how you all have evolved a little bit. But the one constant thing that I think just, you know, is so true to the podcast and who you are is that the one thing the podcast has always been grounded in is practical, real world application and problem solving. And so, yeah, I think, you know, you've evolved into something even bigger than I think what we originally envisioned, and which is a space for, you know, the J.D. Edwards community to share real world insights and navigate this increasingly complex ERP decision making. You know, I think that's a testament to you guys and just how curious your minds are and how you allow that to guide you. And it has delivered great value, I think, to a lot of different people out there.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
You guys appreciate how the landscape in the last 2 years as well has changed, right? I mean, especially with AI and the AI revolution and all that's changed everything. It's been a game changer for every role within the business as well, and kind of served for us as an opportunity to help people along that path, right? We've had to evolve along with it. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
And you're creating year-round value, right? Like this isn't a point in time, you know, where you have to show up. You know, people can listen to your content anywhere and everywhere at any time. And, you know, I think that's, you know, again, more of the direction wanting to meet customers where they are and where they need when they need you, where they need it. So again, testament to you guys for
We've probably been most successful at educating people on Midwesternisms. I mean, I know that. That's probably the most value that I've gotten out of this whole thing is, you know, we've been doing this now for, 100 episodes. We've been doing it for 2 years, and our list of Midwesternisms has grown, not shrunk. That's what I just don't understand. I'm like, did they just create these things every week? I mean, what is this? Every time I turn around, there's, Chandra adds another 4 or 5 to the list because she has a conversation with somebody back home. She's like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. Ding, ding, ding. It's pretty funny.
It's like my bucket list. You know, one thing comes off, like 5 things go on. It's kind of the same thing with the Midwesternisms. Or I make a trip back home. I'll mention something to you and you'll be like, what's that? I'm like, oh, we should cover that. Better add that, it's yes. I was wondering too if that was where John was going to go. Like, I can't believe I've learned so much about Midwesternism.
Exactly. You know, the last time I was on, I'm not sure if my wife and I had purchased our cabin or not in northern Michigan, but now we have solidified a foothold in the Midwest. She grew up in a small town in northern Michigan called Lake City. And one of these 1940 Lincoln log cabin on the lake, it's like a block off the lake, came up for sale. And we decided to go in and get that. And so now I'm like immersed in that culture because we spent all of or most of last summer in northern Michigan. Summers in northern Michigan, it doesn't get much better than that. It's so
beautiful. Yes. It's like northern Minnesota too.
But I just love the Midwestern people. And Christine makes fun of me because she'll say, Chris left the house to take a 20-minute walk and he comes home 3 hours later. It tells me about 10 different neighbors that he met.
Yes.
And yes. Then, this was like within a week of us having this cabin and being there, we went for a walk one morning and probably we passed 3 or 4 people where they're like, hey, Chris, what's going on, Chris? And she's like, my husband, the extrovert, these Midwestern people are not going to know what to do with you, Chris, with all you jabber-jawing.
They're going to eat you up. They're going to eat you up.
We were talking about podcasts, an interesting fact, I don't know if you all know this about podcasts, but they really grew because of women. When men decide to do leisure stuff, we just shut it all down. We just go do what we're going to do and don't feel guilty about it. But women tend to do it more on the run. And I know when I was a chief innovation officer at Einstein Bagels, one of the things that we learned is that women were going into the stores and buying like a bagel sandwich for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would just sit in their car in the parking lot. They didn't want to eat it on the run, but they didn't want to be around people in the restaurant because they're like always on, always demanded of. Mm-hmm. And so this was like their moment of peace. And it was funny when Chandra was talking about what people could do when they were listening to the podcast, and she was mentioning all these things on the go, women do that more than men do. Mm-hmm. And so the industry really grew on women listeners.
Wow.
And is the audience that most of sponsorship is driven around. So yeah, I thought it was fascinating to hear that.
Absolutely. That is, I didn't realize that. That is fascinating to think about. But
if you look at the top podcasts, they're predominantly women audiences. So like if you think about Mel Robbins' podcast,
Mel Robbins
as an example.
Was the first one I thought of.
Yeah. I love her.
I am friends with her husband, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Got to do a men's retreat with him back in September.
Oh, wow.
And he's the Robbins in the household that I love the most now.
no offense, Mel, but
just super sweet and generous people.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
They're very cool.
That's awesome.
That was one of the first podcasts that Chandra actually introduced me to. I mean, I was really actually fairly new to podcasting and listening to podcasts when Chandra and I met, and we quickly... started, she helped me basically build out my library very, very quickly. And Mel Robbins was definitely one of the first that she introduced me to, which was really cool. So, Chris, you've got some news coming up, right? I mean, we've got the new book, you know?
I got the new book. Unignorable, The Science of Being Taken Seriously will be out by year end. I signed a contract with a publisher last week, Amplified Publishing Group. So I'm so excited about them and the support that they're going to provide in this launch. And I mean, it's crazy because the book was done in December, and it's crazy to think that it's not going to see the light of day until December of 2026. And then the wow. full hard launch for it's going to be first quarter 2027. Wow. So there's a part of me that thinks I should already start writing book number three so that I don't have such a lag. But it's pretty significant to sign this contract because 10 years ago this week, my first book, People Before Things, came out. And
has it been 10 years already?
10 years. And I would have never thought that I would either write book two or that if I did, that it would take me 10 years to research and write. But it is what it is. And I'm grateful for where it landed. I'm actually really, really proud of the book and cannot wait for people to read it.
Awesome. I am excited about it for sure. Yeah. Did you ever think that you would, you know, when you think back over your career, did you ever think you would be an author?
No. And what it was funny, the inkling came to me because it first came to me, I was a CIO at Red Robin, and I had a tradition of writing a playbook for my team every year. And it was a little pamphlet that I printed out for them. It was generally 20, 25 pages long. You know, we'd do an offsite event. We would talk about the goals for the year, explain where it was at in the playbook, and then just ask them. Anytime somebody asks you to do something, make sure it's in the playbook. And if it's not, my door's open. Come see me and let's talk about where that might fit in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, probably year two of it, there was a gentleman on my team who came to me and he was like, I like this. I like this playbook. I like the way you write. Have you ever thought about writing a book? And I literally, first phrase out of my mouth, it will be a snowball chance in hell that I will ever write a book. That I do not have the kind of attention span to sit down and do that kind of thing. And right around that time, my grandmother passed, and she was the most, and still is the most important person that had, you know, come into my life. And to get through that grieving, I started journaling, and I started journaling every day, and I started to build a muscle around writing and sharing my ideas. You know, in high school and college, I was a rock and roller. I was in a band. I did not want to finish college. I wanted my band to get signed. And I wanted to, you know, rock the world. And so there was a creative bone in me, but this starting to write was this new creative expression for me. Nice. And so really, by the time this guy mentioned, have you ever mentioned writing a book? And, you know, this journaling was happening, those ideas started to come together. And at some point I said, I might be interested in that. The first few times I took a swing at it, I'd write a chapter, I'd give it to Christine. I'd be like, hey, what do you think? And she would read it and she would say, I think you should keep journaling. Just keep journaling. I don't think you need to write a book. And finally I came to her and I had a chapter and she read it and she said, I think you might have something here. Now, I think you should work on this idea a little bit more. Nice. And that's what became People Before Things.
Very, very cool.
Very cool.
I think it's hard. It's probably hard for people to understand the amount of work that goes in and the time and energy and the process around actually writing a book. It's a lot. You know, I've heard from a few that it's a lot more significant than people believe it is. But wow. So,
well, and it's significant because it, like, the first time I wrote a book, I sat down for 10 months and wrote a book. That was all I did.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
You know, writing this book, the research process for it, the writing of it, that was up alongside everything that I have going on based on the People Before Things platform and work. Right. And it's trying to find that balance. This time around, too, I hired a literary coach because I was committed to, I want to be a better writer. I want the second book to be a really well-written book. And so the process was a little more thoughtful and intentional because I had somebody who's written 19 books herself right alongside of me saying, like, hey, this could be better. Or, yeah, we're not going to use this. We had one chapter that I was like super excited about. And she was like, I do not think this should be in the book.
Really?
And that process then required more from me than the first time because I was balancing a lot of things, but I was also committing to create a better product than I did the first time.
That's
an intense. Yeah. It's an intense process for sure.
I applaud getting the coaching on it too, knowing that you wanted to do a better job. You know, you wanted to make your writing better. That's cool.
Well, and what I'd say to the listeners in general, what I've learned is you can be cheap about anything, but do not be cheap with your goals. And if my goal was to be a better writer, I was going to invest in the best literary coach that money could buy. And I could afford to be cheap on things that just don't matter as much. And so when it comes to our goals, if we really want something, to have somebody alongside of us who has that lived experience and has all the receipts of succeeding, to have that kind of guide. I mean, she changed the way I write completely. Oh. And just so, you know, my normal, and you can see on the podcast, my normal communication style is it takes me a while to land the plane. And she has zero tolerance for that whatsoever. She calls it the high heartbeat moment. Like, you need to bring the reader right when they start reading the opening paragraph. You need to bring them into the high heartbeat moment. And then if you interest them, then you can back into how you ended up in the high heartbeat moment. So like in my new book, I tell the story of getting electrocuted by my father's lawnmower. You open up that chapter with me laying on the ground, feeling like I just died in the middle of a hot summer day in Florida. And then if the reader's like, why does he think he's almost dying? What happened? Then we back into, let me tell you about my father's lawnmower.
I think you can even translate that to delivering presentations.
I have a chapter in a new book, Stop Selling with Slides or Sell Without Slides. That's exactly one of the pieces of advice. Like, come in, high heartbeat moment. We are here today because I'm asking for approval to spend $2 million on blah, blah, blah. Instead, you know, as an executive, I would sit through decks where it was a 43-slide pitch.
Yep.
And then you get to the ask on slide 44 when everyone is completely fatigued, which is the worst time to ask somebody for something.
I think you just hit on Paul's pet peeve. I'm saying.
I mean, I've been, one of the coaching moments I had in my career so far was around executive communications. And one of the big takeaways I took, or I, you know, that I had was lead with your conclusion. Right. And I have tried to coach my team and others that, you know, when you're talking to executives, you know, you got to think you got 5 minutes. You don't get the 45, you don't get the 30, you know, you just got to lead with that conclusion and then let everything behind it then support whatever that is. But if you try to do like you were writing your normal thesis statements and everything else that you've done in your life where you've got this intro and then you break it all down and then 45 minutes later, or to your point, 110 slides later, or whatever, now we get to the actual proposal. Now we get to the punchline. You've lost them. You had 5 minutes of their attention and you totally lost it. You need to take advantage of that 5 minutes, get straight to the point. And then if they need the additional details, sure, you can have the other slides there and support and go only through the ones you need to go through to answer any of the questions. But you may very well only need that first slide. If it makes, who doesn't want to get in and say, hey, at the end of the day, we have three options here. You know, here's one, here's two. We're recommending three. Makes the most sense. Any questions? No, then we're done. If it's why, okay, well, I've got additional stuff to back that up. But one of the things that just kills me is I get into a meeting and I've got an agenda and I can just see it. I was like, okay, there's the first 15, there's the next 30. Okay. Yeah. We're going to get to, I can put this on mute, take myself off video and wait for 55 minutes until I care. I hate to say it that way, but.
Here's what I share in the book. What I share in the book is the science says that our emotional brains move much faster than our rational brains. And yet when you think about slides, we try to engage people's rational brains. So in the book, I share a story about one of the biggest pitches I ever did. I got in front of the board and I literally opened with, we are here today because I'm going to ask you for $25 million to invest in our general managers to improve their lives. Let me tell you a story about Sarah. Sarah is our highest performing general manager. She's a single mom. She's been in this system for 7 years. She does not get to have breakfast nor take her kids to school. Why? Because she's got to be in the restaurant at 5 a.m. to be ready for the restaurant to open at 11 a.m. because she's using pencil and paper to do things that technology should be doing for her. So what you do in that flow is you open with, this is the ask, and then engage the emotional brain immediately by telling them a personal story about who the high performer is and what the stakes are if she is unable to have this resolved, and that what the cost of the organization would be if she were to leave. That does not require slides.
Nope.
I think we put slides up because we're uncomfortable. And so what we do is we make our audience uncomfortable because we're uncomfortable.
I want to interject here. So speaking of uncomfortable, remind me to never come on a podcast with Chris Leaping again, because I can't stand up to this guy. Like, what? Come on. He's just over here spitting truth, and knowledge just blows from him.
That's why you want to be here, John. You can learn as we do the podcast. That's why we love doing it.
I have been fortunate to have been around Chris for 10 years, because when he published his book, that was when he and I first met. We weren't doing podcasts, but I invited Chris to allow me to interview him about his book, and we were going to share it with our community. And I think he came to our conference that next year and spoke. And so for off and on over the course of 10 years, we partnered with Chris in a lot of different ways. But the one thing that is, as you can tell when you talk to Chris, is, I mean, he's such a great storyteller. He is so knowledgeable about what he's talking about, and his message really resonates with our community. And that's why we've always enjoyed partnering with Chris. And, I'm excited to read this book when it comes out. So it'll be amazing.
Speaking of that partnership, though, we've got Blueprint 40 then coming around the corner, right? First week of May, I believe this time around, for the second year in a row, Chris, you're gonna be a part of that conference and helping us. Obviously, we've got this JD Everidge community, we've got the PeopleSoft community, we've got, part of the Oracle community coming in. And I know we had a great time last year, and, you were introducing some of the concepts, right, behind I believe the unimaginable. What do we have in store this time around with Blueprint?
I love the Quest community and the people that I've met in the community. I love John and John's team. And Christine, my wife and also my business partner, she comments to me all the time when I get off of a call with the Quest team that I'm generally bouncing off the walls. I just really like working with everyone. So this year, I'm going to be hosting a couple of workshops for people to come in and learn the concepts around unignorable and the science of being taken seriously. But when I say workshop, I'm not going to be talking at people. It'll be like the workshops I did last year where I'm prepared and I've got things that I can share, but we're going to have some good old-fashioned work therapy together and just talk about the struggles that everyone has at work in getting their ideas heard. You know, the reason I wrote this book is that Gallup reports that 75% of the global workforce, 75, do not feel that their opinions matter at work. And I think you shouldn't have to be loud and obnoxious and self-promoting for your ideas to be heard, for your opinion to be heard. And that's what I explore in Unignorable, and that's what I'm going to explore in these workshops. Asking people to just interact with me live about like what's going on at work and what's irritating you and what do you wish people were listening to? What do they need to know? What ideas do you have that they need to know? And I'm going to give them some tactical, practical steps that when they go back to the office, they can immediately implement.
Excellent.
That's two of the four things I'm doing. I'm also going to be involved in the executive forum. Mm-hmm. And we'll be moderating a panel of some outstanding leaders in the community and having, you know, I think a very thoughtful and intentional conversation about some lessons that they've learned on being on the leading edge of things. And then we're going to have a general conversation in the executive forum about how we innovate and engage and galvanize people in our organizations, again, with our ideas. I brand it in the book as trusted influence. And I brand it that way because when you think about people with authority, they have positional power. But just because you have C in your title does not mean that your ideas are being heard either. Does not mean that the boards are investing in your ideas or your plans. And sometimes C-levels, they have a point of view about something that needs to happen, either to accelerate something like AI or to tap the brakes and say, listen, for our business, that's nothing but hype. And they have a hard time getting that message through. So with the executive forum, that'll be a part of that conversation.
Nice.
And then I think the last thing is I'm doing a lunch talk for, I think, the Oracle Cloud Breakout.
We love working with Chris. So Chris, the feeling is mutual, what you shared earlier. And other than just being someone that is just an absolute pleasure to be around, I know that Chandra and Paul, you guys agree with that statement that is Chris. But, you know, we also are fortunate that I think we share kind of this aligned vision of how we deliver value, how to make, you know, content impactful, and that it has to be put into practice. So a lot of the things that we're doing together, but then also even in our own businesses independently of helping people build skills, can't be done by just consuming content. It has to be put into practice in order to build skills. So, and you know, that's Chris obviously is talented at delivering content, but I think he's even more talented at helping people translate that into applicable skills.
Well, I know you guys have partnered with Chris in, I think, was it the mastermind class way back?
Well, yeah.
Way back in 20, yeah. What was that, 2021?
Yeah, wait,
2021?
2021.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a part of that. And then Chris was also a part of the ELP program that I completed about a year ago.
Yes, so for
Emerging Leaders Program with Quest. Yeah, thank you. Again, we talk acronyms like we think everybody should know them, but not everybody always does. So, which I imagine, Chris, you are still part of that program, this cohort, yeah. And coming up for the next one, John?
Until John kicks me out, basically.
Look, we're not kicking Chris out anytime. Actually, we're partnering together on something else that Chris didn't touch on. So, you know, Chris spoke about what we'll be doing together at Blueprint, but also after Blueprint, we are partnering with Chris to launch a, you know, a quest-oriented, unignorable cohort. So it'll run in that June to early July timeframe. So Chris, you may want to talk about some of the formats and things like that, but we're really excited. It'll be a lot like that mastermind experience that you went through, Chandra. It's, you know, 6 weeks, it's online, but it is pretty intense, 6 weeks. Again, it's just aligned with how I think both Quest and Chris look at delivering value. It's not just events. It's not just podcasts. It's, you know, we're also doing cohorts. It's a guided experience. It's application focused. It's, you know, high touch, high experience type model. So Chris, I don't know if you want to elaborate on that. I know that we will give, Chandra and Paul links for, you know, where people can go and learn more, and those can be put in the show notes and things of that nature. But anything you would want to add about that?
Well, I'm super excited about it, and I am already pointing non-Quest people to be a part of this. Oftentimes, I will end up with some kind of meeting on my calendar where someone's found me, they get on the website, they book a Let's Meet call. And, you know, I think generally people's intentions are to do one-to-one coaching with me, which I'm totally grateful and flattered that that's where they want to go. But it's a little pricey, I think, for people to do that. And so oftentimes they ask, well, what other options are there? And so now I've been like, oh, I've got a cohort that's starting on Wednesday, June 3rd. And it's 6 weeks, and I'll send you a link for the landing page. So this is going to be, it's going to be great to be more deeply entrenched in the Quest community, in the kinds of struggles that they have every day. And again, this is going to be a safe place for people to hang out for 6 weeks and really fine tune the behaviors and skills that they need to be able to get their ideas heard. This is not a communications 101 or like personal branding course, nothing like that.
And open to all levels, I assume. I mean, you're not just targeting this at whatever executives, it's anybody that's interested, right? So
yeah.
I've learned a lot from Chris, obviously, having been part of the mastermind class and then the Emerging Leaders Program. I've read your book, People Before Things, probably three times. Over the last several years, because there's things I just want to keep reminding myself up, or I'll pull up a certain chapter to be like, oh, this reminds me of something Chris talked about. Let me go refresh my mind on this. What's a good way to maybe approach this? So I'm a huge fan and can't wait for the next book, and may have to look at that cohort program myself. I find that, you know, I learned something from you constantly, even through, you know, the emails that you send up that I have signed up for. So for those that aren't aware, you can find Chris online. We will link to his online presence as well. And you can sign up for emails. And they come out, I think it's every Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
They were every Friday until this week. They started on Thursdays because I realized people are not reading this stuff on Fridays. when people reply to my newsletter, they're usually replying to me like on a Monday or Tuesday. So it sort of sits there for a while. So I'm going to be trying different days.
Love it.
Thank you for all the nice things you all said. But we are here to celebrate your 100th episode. We're not here to celebrate me. So we should change the subject.
I mean, if we have to. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, one of the things we always said this podcast was going to be about was, you know, practical application and exchanging ideas that, you know, for everybody and getting to know everybody in the community. But we wanted to do it while having a little bit of fun, right? Is that fair, Chandra? And the fun factor has always been the Midwesternism. So I know we kind of segued there a little bit talking about Michigan and Lake City and whatnot. And we've had this long list. I mean, we could probably even do a favorites episode on just what are our favorite you know, Midwesternisms.
We should do that.
You know, but what did you pick for this time around, Chandra?
Well, I picked a topic that I'm not sure how many people are going to be familiar with. Skyways. Skyways are what I would call an elevated pedestrian way, walkway, whatever it is, probably the more applicable term, walkway, that connect buildings.
Oh.
So, yeah, it typically they're in urban areas, obviously, where you're going to want to connect a number of buildings together. Minneapolis has 9.5 miles worth of skyways. So you can go through downtown Minneapolis in the skyways. You don't have to go outside. You can go from building to building. You can get yourself good and lost and cover more than 9.5 miles. St. Paul has 5 miles worth in downtown as well. So
believable.
I know, which it makes sense. Known.
Yeah, it makes sense for a place that gets a lot of snow, I guess, right?
Snow.
Oh, I see. You don't want to be outside. Basically, it's so terrible up in Minneapolis, St. Paul area that you'd rather just stay inside and walk the city. I see.
Have you ever been there the third week of January?
I had a corporate apartment in what used to be called Lake Calhoun. They've, I think they renamed that. I had an apartment there. The Calhoun Beach Club was what they called it.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a beach when you're like, it's, you know, negative 12 degrees outside.
It's brutal.
It's brutal. Yeah. When the nose hairs freeze when you go outside and you're like, it hurts, it burns in your lungs. But and
it takes the air out of your lungs. When you walk out of like the airport into, say, minus 10 with a wind chill, minus, you know, 30. Worse, right? All the air goes out. You're just like, you know, it's like a shock to the system. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
Well, I was just saying, after Paul described such a terrible weather event or scene, I'm like, hence the repeat from Skyways, right? Like that's why.
Suddenly all makes sense. Yeah.
The
thing that doesn't make sense to me when I'm in the Midwest and it's summertime and it's really hot, like our cabin does not have air conditioning.
Nope.
And I ask, why don't people have air conditioning? They look at me like that's like such a asinine question. Like, it's not hot that much up here. So why would we need air conditioning? And I'm like, in Florida, it's hot all the time, we still have heaters. Like, come on.
Well, newsflash, Chandra's father, I still don't think has air conditioning, correct?
You're correct. The house that I grew up in, at least from fourth grade on, did not have air conditioning, ceiling fans, and I don't know, you survived. I don't know. My dad would say it made me tougher. So he would say, you know, that Midwest, we're going with, it'll make you tougher.
The Midwest stoicism, is that
stoicism? Yeah, exactly. Right. We're going to go with that.
Whatever anybody thinks about, you know, being a writer and what kind of income might be associated with that, let me just say that our cabin that has no air conditioning, we do have this in-window air conditioning unit that is just so trashy, hanging out the window and dripping water everywhere. And, yeah.
The box one. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's in the window and you can take it out in the winter because you don't want any cool air coming in. So right. You take that out and you put the window down, seal it back up. Yep. I'm familiar.
Little bugs coming in because it doesn't perfectly seal in the window. I mean, I don't know who designed these or why it's a $12 billion industry, but, you know, it is what it is. No offense to any listener out there that supports that kind of business.
We appreciate those people as well for, you know.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, for questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at the JDEConnection@QuestOracleCommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles!
See ya. Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org
/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.